Good morning. Today's Daf Baba Basra is Kufayin Vav. Today's the last Daf of Baba Basra. We are starting today on the Mishnah Kufayin Hamud Amud Aleph from the very bottom of the Amud. Let's begin. As I mentioned a couple days ago, the last Mishnah's last Dafim of Baba Basra are packed with basic information regarding shtaros, regarding the documents, and the Gemara over here is going to be giving a simple demonstration of what a shtar accomplishes as it's being written down. Now, you'll say to yourself, as we go through this Mishnah, it's hard to imagine that at the end of Baba Basra, we're hearing this for the first time. In other words, we hear this time and again throughout all of Shas, and especially like in the Masechtas of Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra. It's information that, like, we already know, but that's the way the Gemara operates. The Gemara, you know, it takes a certain amount of information, assumes that we know the information, and teaches us halachas based on these assumptions, and then at a later point in time, the Mishnah just says it, establishes it. It's the just simply the manner in which the Mishnayos and the Gemara operate. We start off with a Mishnah. The Mishnah starts off: Amav es chaver b'shtar. If I lend money to a friend of mine with a document, so now I can collect from encumbered properties, meaning that basically once it's a documented loan, so therefore there's a lien on the property. Once there's a lien on that property, I'm the lien holder, I'm the note holder, I'm the lien holder, and so therefore my lien is going to be attached to that property wherever that property may go. Property is going to get sold off to somebody, I'm still the lien holder. So I'm still the note holder, and therefore I can collect from that property. Again, this information we already know, we all know, but the Mishnah is just saying it out. However, if the loan was not a documented loan, it was just simply lent in front of witnesses, so you collect, but you only collect from unencumbered properties, which means I'll go to the borrower, if he has any current holdings, I'll collect from him, but I will not collect from, I cannot collect from properties that are sold off by others. Obviously, if the property is still by him, I'm going to be able to collect from it, but I can't go over to any of the buyers of the properties and collect from them. There's no encumbrance. There's no lien on the property itself. What if it's a handwritten note? Meaning, I, the borrower, wrote the note. I owe you. So this is the classic traditional IOU, right, that we discussed a couple days ago, where let's say you use pronouns, you didn't use proper names, but we're not discussing that right now. We're discussing the proper names were written down, the lender and the borrower identified. It's just a handwritten note. Nobody signed on the document. So is this an enforceable document? Yes, as a Mishnah, but there's no lien. It doesn't produce a lien. It doesn't create a lien. So the Mishnah says that it's collectible, but it's only collectible from from unencumbered properties. What if you have a guarantor who signed on the document, but who signed on the document after the witness has signed on the document? So can you go after the guarantor? So the Mishnah says yes, but it doesn't create any lien on the property of the guarantor. The Gemara tells the following incident where it was this case was asked of Rabbi Yishmael. If you have the guarantor signing on the document after the witnesses, so what can you do? So Rabbi Shmuel's response was, you can collect from the guarantor, but from unencumbered properties of the guarantor. So Amalah Benanus, the Benanus says, Benanus says, no, that's not the case. Meaning, if you have a guarantor signing on the document after the witnesses signed on the document, that creates no obligation whatsoever on the guarantor. You're not a guarantor if you're signing after the witness is signed. So Amarlo Lama, Amarlo Hare. So Rabbi Shmuel says to Benanus, why should that be? And Benanus responds to Rabbi Shmuel, well, let me give you the following example illustration. It's a graphic illustration of what it means to be a guarantor after the fact. So Mishnah says, let's imagine. Hachonik es echad b'shuk umatzu chaverim. So let's say you're in the market and you are witness now to the following scene. There's a guy in the market who goes over to your friend and starts strangling him. Let's assume the Mishnah to be taken literally. Okay? So in other words, literally now you're watching your friend being strangled. But you also at the same time understand why this is in fact so. He's being strangled right now because he's a borrower and the strangler is a lender. Now, it's always going to be hard to defend a strangler. I admit that. That's always the harder position to take. But Take me somewhat tongue in cheek. But he is owed money, meaning he lent the money and the guy's not paying. And so, in other words, the strangler, again, his method over here may be a little bit rough, but at the same time, he is owed money. So he'd like to get paid. And, you know, there are legal ways to go about it. This is not the best way to do it, but he'd like to get paid. You understand this, and you go over to the lender / strangler, and you say to him, "Look, do me a favor. I understand right now he's a bit of a deadbeat. I get it. But what I'm ready to do is I'm ready to take on the responsibility of the loan, meaning I'll co-sign." Now, this is well after the origination of the loan, and you're basically coming in just to save your friend from a good old-fashioned strangling. So the Mishnah says, "Hachonik esecha b'shuk umatzu chaveiro, v'amalo hanach lo livim alon v'ani etein lach, and I'll make sure to give to you," meaning I'll be the guarantor of the loan, potter. Now, you, at this point in time, have no financial obligation nor liability, because you're coming well after the fact. He didn't lend the money because of you. Shalom alamunaso hilvau. Rabbi Benanus' words are very strong. He says that when the money was lent, it was not as a result of you. And so therefore, meaning you may save your friend from a strangling, and you may not. But you certainly don't become liable at that point in time, and you don't become part of the loan. You don't become a co-signer loan after the fact. And Benanus now is just making the same point, just, you know, not as dramatic as we just discussed. Meaning, if you're a cosigner cosigning after the witnesses, you're not really part of the loan. And the loan was not lent as a result of you. And so therefore, Benanus is of the opinion that when you're signing on the document after the signatures, you're a zero. Your liability is zero. Your responsibility is zero. And what Rabbi Shmuel's counter argument would be, and remember, Rabbi Shmuel says that when you're signing after the witnesses, so he says that you are liable, although there's no encumbrance upon you and your property, but you are going to be liable. So hopefully by the end of today we'll have a better understanding of what the machlokus is, but at this juncture, Benanus is making a very strong case that you have no financial responsibility if you're signing after the signatures. The only time that you are going to have liability as a co-signer is if you're there at the origination of the loan, where you're saying to the lender, "You lent to him, and I'm part of the loan. I'm co-signing on the loan." So the Amar Rabbi Shmuel Rosishiachim Yasek Bedine Mamanos. Now this is the last Mishnah of Baba Basra, which means that's really the last Mishnah of Seder Nezikin. I don't mean Seder Nezikin, there's still Sanhedrin Makos, we got more coming up, but I mean though in terms of the Bavas, Bava Kama, Bava Mitzia, Baba Basra, this is the last Mishnah. So this is kind of like now a summary statement about Nezikin in general. So Rod says, Shiyachim Asuk B'din Imamos. Anyone who wants to get smart, so which section of Torah should you be involved with if you want to be Machim, if you want to get smarter? Like really test your mind and improve your mind. So the Gemara says you're going to be learning Mamanos, meaning go through the Bavas. But become Baba Basra, and the Gemara says Yachim, you're going to get smarter. Why? Sheilecha Mikseva B'Torah Yoser Mihen. There's no subject matter in the Torah that's greater than them. Ve'hein Kemayna Noveya. It's like a wellspring that keeps producing water, meaning there is no end. The amount of questions that you can ask and the amount of permutation situations, details, and you know, with the smallest little change in minutia, the halacha is going to change. It's unending. And the Gemara says, and Rabbi Yishmael says, and if you want proper guidance on what the halacha is going to be when it comes to Dinei Mamonos, so you should serve Shimon ben Nanus. Meaning, Rabbi Shmuel is following up all this with, in other words, he just had a debate with Shimon ben Nanus. Shimon ben Nanus made a very strong case that if you're co-signing on a loan after the signatures, you're not financially responsible. He illustrated that through the example of somebody watching your friend getting strangled in the marketplace. And this is basically, it sounds like Rabbi Shmuel is basically saying, I'm capitulating to him in this situation, and in general, I'm going to say that he is a expert on the matters of monetary law. One thing we can't do, meaning now we can still involve ourselves in Dinei Mamonos, we cannot be Mishamish Rabbi Shimon ben Nanus, meaning that obviously is no longer an option for us, but the first one it certainly is. Okay, we are now in the Gemara on Kuf Ayin Hey Amud Beis. And the Gemara now is going to be dealing with one of the most basic questions when it comes to contract law and liens, and that is a lien recognized by the Torah or is a lien not recognized by the Torah? Meaning, I'll put it this way. We have just learned together in the Mishnah that when there's a loan and it's a documented loan, it's a milvah b'shtar, so it creates a lien. Is that from the Torah or is that a rabbinical institution? We discuss that right now. Amar ula dvar Torah echem alva b'shav echem alva apel govim minachas meshubanim maitam shibud daraisa. So, ulas of the opinion that anytime there's a loan, documented or undocumented, it creates a lien. And that lien is recognized by the Torah. Where do we see the Torah recognizing such a lien? So Rashi quotes a pasuk. Rashi says, Yotzi alecha ha'avot, v'hua din lamekarkai. So Rashi says it's based on the fact that the Torah says, well, if let's say there was a loan and there was collateral that was security against the loan. So under certain circumstances, I mean, the Torah says that what you should do is that if the borrower needs that security at night, let's say it's a blanket, so you should give it to him at night. But in other words, but then you go back and you take it back during the daytime. But what is the Torah telling us? The Torah is telling us that if there is security held against the note, what we would call collateral, so that is that's bona fide, meaning the Torah is recognizing it. And this is a little bit of a jump. It's not a broad jump, but it's a jump. It's still a little bit of a jump. We're extending that now, not just to collateral being held by the lender, but we're extending that to property as well. Now the lender is not holding property. You can't hold property. But over here, if collateral is recognized by the Torah as security against the loan, so land, which is solid, which is real, in other words, even in English, we refer to it as real estate, which is solid, which is real, also is going to be held against the loan and is security against the loan. And according to Ula, it's true whether the note is documented or not documented. Now, he's not disagreeing with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says document the loan, there's a lien. Undocumented loan, there's no lien. He's not disagreeing with our Mishnah. He's just simply telling us that mina Torah, it's all going to have a lien. And now what the rabbis did is that they scaled back, meaning on an undocumented loan, the rabbi said, we are forgiving the lien. Why would they do that? Gemara gives a very good reason why. Because we want to protect buyers. Meaning we want an economy that works. The Chachamim understand that if left to the Torah, where there would be a lien on every loan, even undocumented loans, you have a guy buying a piece of property, not knowing that there was a lien attached to that property, and then at a later point in time, the property's going to get ripped away from him. And then he's going to be like, well, how was I supposed to know about it? It wasn't documented. There were no witnesses. And it's going to create a lot of chaos in the marketplace. So in order to protect buyers of property, so therefore the Chachamim limited the Torah's law only to documented loans where there is a fair expectation that people know about it. And the Gemara is about to make exactly this point. Gemara says, well, what about documented loans? Documented loans, the buyer is the one who caused the loss to himself. Meaning, because it's documented, because witnesses are signing on it, therefore, assume this is public record and public knowledge. Therefore, when somebody buys a property that had a lien on it, that was documented, should he have known about it? Yeah. There's an expectation that he should have known about it. Okay. This is all the opinion of Ula. So, Ula's of the opinion that Shibra's min HaTorah, and what the rabbis did is the rabbis forgave the lien and undocumented loans in order to protect the buyer. Next. Rabba Amar, Dvar Torah Echa Milva Bishav Echa Milva Ape, Inu Gova Elam Nechasim B'nei Chorin. Maitam Shibud Alav D'Araisa. And Rabba takes us in the other direction, which is that this idea that there's a lien on property is not Torah law. The Torah does not place a lien on property, neither for documented nor for undocumented loans. Now, what about the pasuk that we quoted? The Gemara, the Rashbam explains very simply. That's talking about collateral. That's talking about something that the lender is physically holding and in his possession at the time of the loan, given to him at the origination of the loan. Over here, however, we're talking about property that was not given to the lender. So you can make a very easy distinction between collateral and property. And in fact, Rabba obviously does. He subscribes to this idea. So the Gemara says, oh, now, if there is no lien min Torah, so then why is there a lien? Meaning again, Rabba also agrees with our Mishnah, which is that if it's a documented loan, there's going to be a lien. Why? Meaning, so here now, the way he understands it is that the Chachamim placed a lien on the property in the case of documented loans. Why would they do that? The answer, says Rabba, is in order to stimulate lending. We see time and again, the Chachamim have a very good understanding that a healthy economy is built on lending. Lending is the backbone of a good economy. Therefore, they want to stimulate lending. Well, if I lend money and I have no recourse in terms of me getting paid back, I'm not going to lend. So therefore, what the Chachamim did is they instituted liens so that people will lend money knowing that there will be recourse in the event of a default. I'll be able to collect my loan through land, through property. But that's only going to be by documented loans, not by undocumented loans. And here it's going to be the same point that we made earlier. So if the Chachamim want to stimulate lending, so why didn't they attach a lien to every kind of loan? We know the answer already. Hasam leisle kala. So the Gemara says, because if it's an undocumented loan, it's not on record, it's not public, and therefore a person buys property and it's an undocumented loan, how is he supposed to know that there was a loan outstanding? How is he supposed to know that there's a lien on the property? So again, so here it comes back to the same point. Therefore, the Chachamim did not attach a lien to an undocumented loan because they wanted to protect buyers. Fine. So where do we stand right now in terms of a lien? Machlokes between Ula and Rabba, whether it is Shiba Daraisa or Shiba Darabanan. We have Ula saying Shibud is Daraisa. Rabba's of the opinion that Shibud is Darabanan. Correct. Absolutely correct. Meaning, Ben's point is excellent. It doesn't come out to make any difference whatsoever because they both agree to the Mishnah. It's just a question of principally where do we start? And then how we get to the Mishnah. Practically speaking, is there going to be a difference? I'm hard pressed right now to see a difference between Ula and Rabba. It seems to be just more of a theoretical, not theoretical, but in other words, the basis of whether Shibud works Minotaur or not. Okay, the Gemara says now we do have a bit of a problem because Umi Amar Rabba Hachi V'Hamar Rabba. So the Gemara says now we have another statement made by Rabba, which is now. Based on what we just learned together, is going to be difficult to understand. And that's the following. Again, a reminder of what we already know. When you are a Bechor, you're going to get Pishnaim, you're going to get a double portion of over what each one of your brothers is going to be receiving. Each one of your brothers is going to be receiving X, and you the first one are going to be receiving 2X. But, as we've said already a number of times, but you're going to be receiving 2X only from current holdings. If there's an account receivable in the estate, and the estate only collects their account receivable after dad dies, so you, the firstborn, are not going to be receiving a double portion on any collectible, only on the current holdings at the time of dad's death. However, Rabbah teaches us the following halacha. Let's say there was an account receivable of the estate, and the estate collected property to satisfy the account receivable. So what Rabbah is about to teach us is that the firstborn is going to be receiving a double portion of that. Why? It's very simple. Because when you have an account receivable and you're collecting land, you had a lien on that land, and therefore you are the de facto owner of that land already. So it's not a collectible, it's yours already. You're just going through the process of taking that which is yours. And this is Rabba teaching us this. Now, is Shibud Daraisa, by the way, your question of what's a nafkamina, this would be a nafkamina. So if Shibud is Daraisa, so then you understand. If Shibud is Darabanan, so then the firstborn should not be receiving a double portion.
Why would the Rabbanan with Daraisa make a difference?
Because the Chachamim allowing you to collect, the Chachamim are not saying that you are the owner, meaning from a Torah standpoint, the Chachamim are just simply giving you that right to collect. But you're not, meaning it's not the Torah's. It's not the Torah recognizing you being the owner. It's a Chachamim allowing you to take. And in other words, for a Bechor, the Bechor would not be receiving a double portion of that. Okay, I could still argue the other way, but that the Gemara seems to be very clear that this would in fact be so. Let's see all this inside in the Gemara. Umi amar Rabba Achiv amar Rabba gavu karka yeshlo gavu ma'uzein lo. If by collecting their estate's account receivable and they collect with land, the firstborn is going to be receiving a double portion of that. If they collect money, so then the Bechor is not going to be receiving a double portion of that. So v'chite ma'epoch derabalulo dulu l'rabba. So the Gemara says, okay. So that is a pretty clear indication that according to Rabba, Shibud is Daraisa. So maybe we just simply got the signals crossed. Maybe Rabba holds Shibud is Daraisa. Maybe Ula holds Shibud is Darabban. The Gemara says, but we can't say that. V'hamar Ula dvar Torah bal chov dine b'zivoris. We also know that according to Ula, a creditor is allowed to collect land from a Torah's perspective. The Torah, however, only allows him to collect C-grade property. Remember how we graded properties on A, B, and C? The best land is called Eretz, the middle land is called Beinus, and the lowest level land, the lowest grade land is called Ziboris. And Ula made the statement that a lender can only collect from Ziboris, not from A property, not from B property. And just, if you remember the Gemara in Gittin basically allowed the lender to collect mid-grade property, B-level property, and again, that's to stimulate lending. Incentivize the lender to lend in the future. Anyway, the statement of Ula is Dvar Torah, which means on a Torah level, the lender is allowed to collect land, which again gives us a very clear indication that according to Ula, Shibud is Daraisa. So Rabba Taima de Bnei Marava Kamar Vlei Lo Sfirale. So the Gemara says like this. Really, Ula is of the opinion that Shibud is Daraisa. And as far as Rabba is concerned, he himself disagrees. When he quoted the halacha that we just learned together about the Bechor and the estate's account receivable, collecting land, where the Bechor gets Pishnayim, that was not his own personal opinion. That was him quoting the Bnei Marava Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael, but he himself doesn't agree with that. Okay. Continuing now the discussion of whether or not Shibud is Daraisa, Shibud is Darabban, and Rav Shmuel Damar Tavayim Milva Apein Agova Lo Min Hayoshim V'lo Min Halakuchos Ma'itam Shibud Alav Daraisa. So according to Rav and Shmuel, if let's say you have an undocumented loan, you can't collect from that. You can't collect from the buyers. You can't collect from the estate, meaning the estate is considered like a new entity, and therefore you can't collect. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Rabbi Tavayim, Mevape, Gova Beimin Yorshin, Ubeinam Lakuchos. And according to Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, if you have a shibud on property, you can collect from the estate. You can collect from buyers. Why? My time is shibud daraisa, because shibud is daraisa. So Meisve, the Gemara challenges based on the following Mishnah. Hachofer bor b'rishos harabim. Okay, the Mishnah over here is one that we've done some time ago. Mishnah taking us back to Baba Kama. The Mishnah describes the following. You are digging a pit in the Rishus HaRabim. Okay, you're in the public domain. You're right in the middle of 95 and you're digging a hole right in the middle of 95. Okay, that is what's called being a mazik. You're damaging. Obviously, you're going to be responsible for all the damages that's incurred. Okay, and it's of the four main categories of Nezek. This obviously falls into the category of Bor. Okay, you're making a pit, Rishus HaRabim. So, now fall off shore of a Hargo Potter. So now let's say an ox walks through the street, and you're in the bottom of the hole, still digging your ditch, and an ox comes now, falls into the ditch, lands right on top of you, and kills you. Okay, so the owner of the ox is going to be exempt for this death, meaning under certain limited circumstances, the owner of the ox is going to have some sort of financial liability for the death. Not here. Not here because you're the one digging the ditch. You caused it. Now, the Gemara says, and let's go take this even a step further. Not only are you, the owner of the ox, going to be exempt for any damages that's incurred, but let's go on. Ela she'im mesa shor, yorshe bal habor chayav l'shalan demei shor l'ba'alav. It is a logical conclusion, which is that because you dug a ditch, and you're going to be financially responsible for any liability, for any damage that's caused by the ditch, so not only is the owner of the ox going to be exempt for your death, but if the ox gets hurt in the process, damaged in the process, so you, now you're dead, so we don't really mean you, But your estate now is going to be responsible to pay for all the damages that's incurred to that ox. Okay? And it makes perfect sense. Meaning, you're damaged. Now, the fact that you're dead doesn't, it's not going to waive the financial liability. Financial liability is just going to roll onto the estate. And the estate's going to be responsible. It's not capital punishment. There's no capital punishment here. The ox caused the death, not you. The only thing I will just smile about is that is exactly how the eulogy is going to go over here under this in such a scenario. I don't know if this is going to make it into the eulogy, but anyway, but what we do have, however, over here is a simple example of now. This is really interesting. Meaning, what kind of obligation is this? The Gemara is treating this like an unrecorded document. Now, I know it's not a loan. We all know it. We all understand it's not a loan. But at the same time, however, it is an obligation and it's unrecorded. Now, I guess you could say, if you'd like to counter that argument, you could say it is recorded. Where's the obligation recorded? In the Torah. Meaning, the Torah tells you that you have to pay for such damages. But still, when all said and done, it's a non-recorded obligation. And yet, who's paying? The estate is paying. This seems to be supportive of Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. That Shibud is Daraisa. That these obligations, albeit unrecorded, are still going to be owed. And they're going to be owed by the family, by the estate. The Gemara makes exactly this point. So, So the Gemara now is trying to deflect. And yes, it's true that these answers that are coming up now in the Gemara are going to be somewhat forced. They're going to be a little bit dochek. But the Gemara is just simply trying to deflect the proof. So the Gemara starts off by saying, well, the reason why the family has to pay is because the person who committed the damages, meaning that's the guy in the bottom of the pit, who quite frankly right now is dead, but the Gemara says that he stood trial. And what the Gemara is basically trying to argue right now is that once you stand trial, so and now you are by court order obligated to pay, it turns into a recorded document. It's like a milvah bishtar. So the Gemara says, Hahargo Ketan, and the Gemara says, now that's a little bit difficult to argue considering the fact that the ox landed on top of him and he died. So when exactly was he taken into court, and when exactly did he stand trial? So Amrav Adaba Avasha Asu Trefa. So the Gemara tries to make another argument. He didn't die while the axe landed on him. He was just simply put into critical condition. And then I know it's morbidly funny, but as long as this is an actual case, as long as this is all theoretical, so we could I could be humorous about it. So while in critical care, now they wheel him into the courthouse, and in his critical condition, so now the court's going to be like, look, we really feel bad for your state right now, but you are financially liable. You dug a hole in the Rishos HaRabim, and therefore you're liable. So that could be the case, right? The Gemara says no, it's not the case. V'hamar Rav Nachman Tani Tana Meis V'Kavro Hasam. So the Gemara says no, but we have a braisa that says very clearly that he died right there and then in the pit. So the Gemara says so he was not taken to court. So the Gemara says Hasam Diasve Dena Apuma Debira V'Chayvuhu. So again, the Gemara, we all know these are dochik answers, these are forced answers, but the Gemara is just simply trying to deflect the proof. So the Gemara says, well, maybe there was a court standing right there at the edge of the pit. And then you had the judges there. In other words, the ox landed on top of him, and the ox was hurt, and he's dying. And then the judges right there at the edge of the pit are going to hold them liable and issue a court ruling right there and then at the edge of the pit. Okay. And again, like I said, a bit of a forced answer, but the Gemara is just simply trying to deflect the proof. Anyway, where do we stand on all this? The Gemara gives us a very clear conclusion in terms of where we stand on all this. We now are on the very top of Kufayin Vav Amud Aleph. Amar Rav Papa Hilchasa Milva Al Peh Gova Min Ayorshim Ve'inu Gova Min Akarkos. So Rav Papa says, in terms of the halacha, split decision. Split decision in terms of the halacha. And that is that if it is a oral document, did I just say that? let me correct myself. Right, if it is, sorry. Sorry, okay. Okay, fine. So you're right, that's the definition of oxymoron. Okay, so milvapet. So, if it's an undocumented loan, so you can collect from the estate, but you cannot collect from buyers. And the Gemara says, and I'll explain the split decision. Again, we go back to a very important value. And that important value is that the Chachamim want to stimulate lending. And imagine, I'm a lender, and I know that I'm lending money to my friend, and look, I trust him, he's a good guy, we're not gonna record it, it's not gonna be documented. But then he dies, and what happens to my loan? My loan just simply disappears. It floats away in thin air. You know, the next time I'm going to lend, I understand the next time I'm going to lend, I'm going to write it down, I'm going to record it, and so that way there's a lien. But you know what, though? Next time I'm just going to think twice before lending money. And so therefore, the Chachamim realize that if with the death of the borrower, the loan is just simply going to disappear, and the estate is not going to be responsible for it, so people are not going to want to lend. And the Chachamim don't want that. They want to stimulate lending. Fine. However, but on the other hand, however, we're not going to expect the buyer to have to pay for these undocumented loans, because again, people don't know about undocumented loans. I know we made this point already earlier this morning. People don't know about undocumented loans, and now a buyer buys property, and then all of a sudden he discovers, oh, wait a second, there's a lien on this property? It wasn't documented. There were no witnesses who signed on it. What's going on over here? So in order to protect the buyers, so therefore there is no lien that's placed on property when the loan was undocumented. So Gemara has a split decision in terms of the halacha regarding an undocumented loan. Estate does have to pay. Buyers have no obligation to pay back.
Isn't there an oath that
they pay? In other words, a shvur is still going to have to be made in order for him to collect. Even if we'll take it one step further, by the way, even if it's a documented loan, there still is a shvur that has to be made when you're coming and collecting from the estate. Okay, einu gova min alkuchos. I'm sorry. Hotzi alav ksaviado shu chayev lo gova min achas minechar. Okay, a handwritten note. Borrows money from a lender and writes an IOU. So does that create a lien? So we learned in the Mishnah it does not create a lien. In other words, if there are no witnesses signing on the document, it does not create a lien. Gemara's question goes like this. What if the handwritten note is taken to court and notarized in court? Can the notarization of a handwritten note in court substitute for the two witnesses? And can that in of itself now create the kind of kol, create the kind of publicity so that now a lien is going to be created? So Rav Yochanan's answer is very clear, and that is, it doesn't add anything to the note. If it's a handwritten note at the time of the origination of the loan, even though it's certified, notarized in court afterwards, that does not give it any more force. The Rami Bar Chama says, yeah, but let's consider now the following mission that we learned together. Learned this mission a long time ago, back in Gittin. Shosha Gittin Psulim Hain, there are three different types of Gittin which are not good, but not disqualified. V'imnisis Havlat Kasha, meaning if that a woman with such a get were to get married to another man, have children with another man, those children are not mamzerim, which means that the get is good, but the Chachamim are not happy with such a get. The Gemara goes through each one of them. So the consequence of it is that you did not write a get that the Chachamim are, in other words, it's not lechatchila. Correct. Agreed. So ksav b'ksav yado ve'in alav eidim. So let's say that it's a handwritten get. Witnesses did not sign on it. Yeshal of eidim ve'in bo zman. Witnesses did sign on it, but it's not dated. It has a date, but it's only signed by one witness. They are not good, but if she marries on the basis of such a get, the children are not going to be a mamzer, meaning the get is b'di'evid good. Rebbe Elazar Omer Alfa Pishen Alav Edim Elish Nasan Labifne Edim Kasher Vegoven Minachasim Mishubadim. Now Rebbe Elazar says that if there are no witnesses on the get itself, it's a handwritten get, and it was presented in front of two witnesses, So therefore, it's going to be kosher, and this is the reason why we're reading this Mishnah right now, gova menachas meshubadim, and she can collect from encumbered properties. Even though it is simply a handwritten get. Now, the Gemara is making an argument now. Now, this takes us back to a debate that we've seen time and again. Meaning, what is the efficacy of a contract? Is it the witnesses signing on the contract? Or is it the fact that you're giving the contract over in front of two witnesses? And this is a standard machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Lazar, Eidik Sivakarte or Eidik Masirikarte. Now, we all know the opinion of Rabbi Lazar is Eidik Masirikarte. That is, the witnesses watching the handing over of the get, that creates the efficacy of the document. Now, the Gemara now is trying to make an argument that it's a handwritten note, but because handed over in front of two witnesses, so therefore it imbues the document with document-like properties, which means, pun intended, that now you can collect from property because it was handed in front of two. And what the Gemara now is trying to do is extend this to our discussion, where it's a handwritten note written by the borrower, but now notarized in front of court. Notarized in the court, I should say. So shouldn't that now give this little note its full status of a document alone, and therefore you should be able to collect from properties? Gemara says these cases are much different than one another. So the Gemara says no. In the case of the get, where you are writing the get, it's a handwritten get, you're not having witnesses sign on the document, but you're handing it in front of two witnesses. Now remember, according to Rabbi Lazar, it is those witnesses who provide the efficacy of the document, but that by virtue of the fact that you're handing in front of two. The Gemara says now, that's not a, and I'm presenting the Gemara like the Rashbam, I'm not reading the Rashbam inside. That's not like a handwritten note which at a later point in time we're going to try to give it a little bit more oomph. This is a bona fide document. Because remember, according to Rabbi Lazar, Eide Masire Karte. The witnesses watching the exchange of the document from the husband to the wife, they're the ones providing the efficacy of the document. That's giving the full power of the document. When we're writing such a get, knowing that we're going to be handing it in front of two witnesses, that's a get, meaning that is the full definition of what a get is. This is considered a documented note. Masha Einkein, in our case over here, we're talking about a handwritten note where the borrower wrote a lender, an IOU to the lender, in his own handwriting, didn't have witnesses sign it, and only now after the fact, we're going to try to give this note now more oomph, more power, more, you know, more collectability, so to say. The Gemara says it's different. It's a different case. Okay. Continuing now in the Gemara, we're at the two dots on Kufayin Vav Amud Aleph. Arav Ayosel Achar Chitim Shars. We're talking now about a guarantor signing after the witnesses sign. Amrav Kodim Chitim Shars Govim Nechas Meshuban Alachar Chitim Shars Govim Nechasen Bnei Chorin. So the Gemara quotes a statement by Rav and says that if the guarantor signed before the signatures, so then you can collect from the guarantor, and not only that, but from even encumbered properties, meaning he's a co-signer. If they sign after the signature, so then you can collect, but only from Mechasim and Echarim, only from unencumbered properties of the guarantor. Zimna Ma'amar Rav, Afilu Kodim Chitim Sharos, Inagov Elam Mechasim and Echarim. Now, sometimes when you went to Rav, he said that even if the guarantor is signed before the witnesses, you can only collect from unencumbered properties. Now, Kashin the Rav of the Rav. So obviously, Rav is being inconsistent, and that's difficult because you would think, we all would think, that Rav has a sheet on this matter. He has a particular position, and, well, what is it? So the Gemara says, Lo Kasha, Hadikasav Beit Ploni Arev, Hadikasav Beit U Ploni Arev. And so the Gemara says the difference is whether or not the Vav is written. The Vav is a conjunction. The Vav means and. And so the Gemara says that if you write the Vav, so that means that he's included as a cosigner on the loan. Without the Vav, so therefore, he is creating some liability for himself, but not much.
Could Arif like be an aid also?
It doesn't seem that way.
Is it before witnesses?
Before the witnesses.
Before the witnesses came or in front of it?
No, meaning No, I understand, but we're looking at the document itself. Meaning,
right.
was he co-signing before the witnesses or after witnesses? I mean, before and after, meaning on the document itself.
He writes his name and his father's name, doesn't have to say word eight.
Right.
So in this case, if he's signing as Arab, how do they distinguish whether he's an Arab or an
A? I'm guessing that, in other words, when they write it on the document, his writing and the guarantor, meaning they're identifying him as the guarantor. So with a Vav, so that means now that he is literally co-signing, meaning he's also a borrower. Without the Vav, then, you know, to a much lesser degree.
If he writes after the signature,
right?
That means that the loan was there before he came.
Agreed.
So we learned. We just said.
Agreed. Agreed.
He would be potter.
Right.
Be
right. Rav Yochanan, I agree. I hear you. Rav Yochanan Amar Echad Zevechadzeh Nogove Elam Lechasam Nechorin Ve'afagav Diksiv Ve'u Ploni Arev. And Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that no, that when you are co-signing on a loan, and even with the conjunction vav, even with the word and, you're still only allowed to collect from the guarantor, but only from unencumbered properties. Meisav Rav Eidim Achasim Al Shel Shalom Beged Pasol. If you have witnesses who sign on the document on a divorce document, and oddly enough, admittedly, this is not the best time to give any kind of warm greetings in a note. But if the okay, look, it doesn't fit into the mood of a get, admittedly. But if there's She'ela Shalom on the document, so then the witnesses sign, so paso. Chayshin Shema She'ela Shalom Chasmo. In other words, it's so I admit this is strange. In other words, it's a get document. The text is a get. And then there's also some like, hi, how are you? How are the kids? Right? How's your aunt doing? And the witnesses, I know it's weird. And the witnesses sign below all that. So, what are the witnesses signing on? Are they signing on the get, or are they just signing off on the how's, you know, how's your aunt doing? So the Gemara says we don't know, and therefore the get's not going to be a registered get. However, Va'amar Rabbi Abba Lididim Mefarsh Leminei Rav Yochanan Sheilas Pasul Ushiilo Kasher. And to which the Gemara says we're going to make the following distinction, and that is, if it's a get and their greetings, then there's no conjunction between the two, and then the witnesses sign afterwards, so we don't know what the witnesses are signing to. However, if the greetings come with the vav in front of it, which now means that everything is strung together, and now there's a conjunction linking together the get and the greeting, and the witnesses sign after that, the witnesses are signing on everything. The vav therefore creates chibur, creates connection between the greetings and the get. Now, I understand, is it somewhat incongruous to put greetings on such a document? Of course it is. We're just dealing with the legality of it. Is it legally joined? Yes, with a vav, it's legally joined. And Rav Yochanan agrees to this, and therefore, according to Rav Yochanan, when the witness is signing on the bottom of the document, it's therefore going to be a valid get. So, hachinami, because of Plonia Arev, so the Gemara says, so now, if you are writing up a document, and you have the words, and so-and-so is a guarantor, with the conjunction and, with the vav, so we should have Rav Yochanan therefore saying that now he is liable. And it's documented. And you have the conjunction, you have the vav. So how can Rav Yochanan argue with Rav? So the Gemara says, Yihachi hanu de Rav. And the Gemara says, he doesn't argue with Rav. The Gemara says that if there's a vav, so that joins, that creates chibur. And then when the witness is signing, so therefore the guarantor is going to be also obligated, and just as obligated as a borrower. So the Gemara says, so now it comes out that Rav Yochanan is not arguing with Rav. So v'chein amar Rav Yochanan. So I'm sorry, Ema v'chein amar Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara says, you're right. And you're absolutely right. Meaning Rav and Rav Yochanan are in perfect agreement with one another. Maiso ba'lifnei Rabbi Shema v'chule amar Rav Barbachana amar Rav Yochanan afa pishe kiles Rabbi Shema's benanas halacha kamosa. So the Gemara says, look, in the Mishnah, you had a lot of respect that Rabbi Shema gave to benanas. And in the Mishnah, we talked about where the guarantor is signing after the witnesses. And Rabbi Yishmael says that the guarantor is going to be obligated, albeit there's not going to be any encumbrance on the guarantor. But he's going to be obligated. And Benana says, no, he's not going to be obligated at all. It'd be no different than stopping your friend from getting strangled in the marketplace. And he has, there's no liability there, there's no responsibility there. So Benana says it's no different than when he signs after the witnesses on the contract. Now Rabbi Shmuel disagrees, and Rabbi Shmuel says, look, I disagree, but Benanas, if you want to learn about monetary law, you go to Benanas. To which now the Gemara is saying, the halacha falls like Rabbi Shmuel, even though he praised Benanas. Ibai lehu. Bechanuk mali, Amar Rabbi Shmuel. So the Gemara says, well, it's interesting. So now we know that if you see the guarantor signing on the document, so the guarantor is going to be liable, responsible. Albeit, again, there's no encumbrance on the guarantor. So Gemara says, I wonder now. Is Rabbi Shmuel going to argue on Benanis' example? Meaning Benanis gave an extreme example to show that the guarantor is not going to be liable. I wonder, says the Gemara. It's an excellent question. So would Rabbi Shmuel argue with that extreme example? So Tashma, Damar Rav Yaakov, Amar Rav Yochanan, Chalakai Rabbi Shmuel, Af Bechanuk. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Shmuel argues with Benanis even in the case of the marketplace. Meaning that when you see your friend getting strangled and you're trying to prevent your friend from getting strangled, and you say to the lender, hey, what is this all about? A loan? Okay, I'm here. I'm using the word loosely, but I'm going to co-sign on the loan. Now, it's a little bit late to co-sign on the loan, but you're taking upon yourself now financial responsibility. So the Gemara says, even in such a situation, Rabbi Shmuel would argue on Benanis. So and what is the basis of your financial responsibility? In other words, you're trying to protect your friend. So halacha gamoso and halacha gamoso, the Gemara says, okay, now that we're all here, so are you really financial? Meaning, is the halacha now going to side with Rabbi Shmuel, even this extreme example? Tashma, dechiyasa Rabbi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, halacha yu Rabbi Shmuel, af bechanuk, the halacha kamoso, af bechanuk. The Gemara says that the halacha does follow like Rabbi Shmuel. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Shmuel, chanuk, v'kana miyad, mishtabin, I'm sorry, mishtabin. So, and the Gemara quotes the name of Shmuel like this. If we have this extreme example where you're trying to save your friend from getting choked in the marketplace, and so you go over to the lender and you say, please stop strangling him. What is this about a loan? So I'm committing myself. If you do a kinyan there and then, so now you're going to be financially responsible. Otherwise, it's just words. And you're not financially responsible. So the Gemara says, interesting. Mechlal da'arev ba'ama lo ba'i kinyan. So the Gemara says, well, that means that if you're a formal arev, which means that at the loan you're co-signing, you don't need to do a kinyan. So the Gemara says, "Upligi de Rav Nachman, Damar Rav Nachman," and the Gemara notes that Rav Nachman will not agree with this because arev debasin hu de lo by kinyan haba ama by kinyan. Turn to the top of Kufayin Vav Amid Beis. Rav Nachman tells us that if you're an arev debasin, if you're a court-appointed co-signer of a loan, so then you do not need to make a kinyan. Why not? Because if you're a court-appointed guarantor, so that means that you clearly are gaining a tremendous reputation by co-signing on the loan. Meaning you are so entrusted that the court appointed you to be a co-signer of the loan. Now, obviously, you have to agree, but... It's like it's like we discussed this before. It's like being an apotropos. It's like with a court appointed someone to be an apotropos. It's a tremendous responsibility.
And it declines?
Of course,
apotropos is like got executive responsibility.
Right,
but
correct.
The neck is not on the line. But this guy is financially putting.
Let me say what I think is very reasonable. He can decline. But in other words, but if you accept it, so you're accepting something which is, it's like serving as a board member. Meaning, you could certainly decline, but at the same time, however,
board members make money and have the prestige. This guy's like
not a nonprofit, but okay. Anyway, look, the idea is that it establishes that you have such a sterling reputation that the court is asking you to do so and you accept it. Your acceptance of it does not even require a kinyan sudar, meaning it's understood that It's such an honor that you're going to accept it. That if, sorry, let me say it better. If you accept it, so then you are committing yourself, however, and therefore it does not require kinyan. But ba'alma by kinyan, so the Gemara says, but generally speaking, however, if you're just co-signing alone, so in order to show Gemara's Nafs, in order to show that you are taking this super seriously, you have to make a kinyan. The Gemara says, as far as the conclusion is concerned, that as a guarantor, the if you're co-signing at the time of the loan, and you're there on the document before the witness is signing, you don't have to make a kinyan. If you are signing on the document after the witness is already signed, you have to make a kinyan. Arif debezin lo by kinyan debayena demehemen le gamar meshabel nafshein. Did I just make up a word? Sure, I did. The gamar meshabed le. If, however, you are court appointed and you're in agreement to the you sign off on being a court appointed guarantor, so then again, based on the fact that Basin now has showed the world that you are such a reliable person that you're co-signing on the loan, so therefore you don't even need a kinyan sitter under those circumstances. Again, assuming you agree to it. Okay, Hajran Allah, that's the end of the 10th parak of Baba Basra. That's the end of Masechta Baba Basra. Mazel tov to everybody. Mazel tov. It's a serious accomplishment, obviously. Tomorrow we start with Sanhedrin, Daf Beis.